Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. My name is Jason Lewis, and I'm your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. First, I want to thank our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by OneCause, leader in online, mobile, and virtual fundraising software. OneCause supports over 6,000 nonprofits to reach more and raise more with innovative solutions. You can visit their virtual fundraising resource center at www.onecause.com. I also want to tell you about what's coming up in July. Our team at Responsive want to invite you to participate in 6 hours of online CFRE-approved training. I am talking about a soup-to-nuts fundraising philosophy that will ensure your organization is ready for the road ahead. No one on the planet is going to offer you tools as researched, as tested, and as sustainable as our four frameworks. If you'd like more information about partnering with OneCause, or more information about our upcoming webinar series, look for information in the show notes. After you do, shoot me an email and let me know that you did. Now let's introduce today's guest.
Hi, Gene. Delighted to have you today on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. There's a couple of different reasons why I'm excited about this. Before we hit the record button, you've shared some great things that we'll unpack throughout the conversation. But before we do that, Gene, would you mind just introducing yourself to our listeners?
Oh, I'd be delighted, and thank you for this opportunity, Jason. My name's Jean Morrow, and I have the privilege of being the Senior VP of Resource Development at the United Way of Berks County. Here in Berks County, most folks know us as Reading, Pennsylvania.
And Jean, you're also involved with AFP, correct?
I am. Again, another honor being asked to be the voted upon to be the board chair, and I began my term in January of this year, not recognizing what was ahead and, you know, embracing all that comes with this incredible crisis we're in right now. So it's a 2-year term, so I'm not quite halfway through my first year of it.
So let's talk about those two sort of spaces. So let's stick with AFP for a moment. So when you and your chapter leaders sort of get together, what are you thinking about? What's the response for your AFP chapter when it comes to COVID-19?
Well, since we had our first board meeting, our virtual board meeting in April, and
sure,
I have to tell you, it was very compelling. I used that opportunity to have an actual board meeting, but much more importantly, to really check in to see how everyone's doing. We have a board of 18 members and very diverse, representing the arts, health and human service, higher ed. And I really needed to see how they were all doing and checking in, because that was about 2-3 weeks from when our governor issued, a shelter from home, and everybody was working from home. And it was a real mixed bag of emotions. Some were just visibly, sad and just a little anxious. Some were being notified they may be laid off. Thankfully, that has not really played out for most of the folks, or it was very short term in nature. So just a lot of anxiety and a lot of, I don't know what's going to happen. So it was very focused on, while we had some business at hand we had to discuss, it was very much focused on checking in with them and encouraging them. Now, we just had a meeting yesterday, and then that we turned our focus much more to business at hand. And we're really, almost all of them are involved in some way, shape, or form caring for people in our community. some much more directly with, you know, a health and human service need, while others may be more in the arts or the conservancy area. And so trying to really figure out and hearing from them how they are, you know, just really, to use that term that's been overused a million times, but really pivoting to figure out how can they do their work and be a resource to our community. You know, one of our officers is the development person at our local conservancy, Berks Nature. And she talked about how they also have a wonderful childcare learning center there, but they can't have it open right now. So what they've done is redeployed a lot of their programming and the childcare center workers to be out on the trails because the trails are being used tremendously. People are really enjoying getting out in nature. I thought that was such a clever way of figuring out, you know, how do we get our work done and remain connected to the community at a time when some of our revenue sources are not happening. And that's something that everyone's struggling, revenue internally at their own organization. And then as you know, an AFP chapter, we're struggling, you know, our main revenue, two pieces, programming. Oops, you know, that's not happening right now in a real sense, though we are providing virtual experiences at no cost to our members.
Right.
And
right.
That's important that we're looked at as a resource. And then secondly, our biggest revenue producer is our National Philanthropy Day, which occurs in the fall. So we're already, you know, talking about that. You know, I've asked all of my committee chairs and officers to take a look at their budget within their committee and really take a hard look at what is a realistic budget in terms of both revenue and expenses.
Yeah. And so you were also sharing with me before we hit the record button, some of the achievements that you've had in the last couple of months since COVID sort of came on the scene at the United Way. And I think that's a remarkable sort of story to unpack really quickly.
Sure. Well, at United Way, we are a traditional fundraiser, very successful. Last year, we raised just over $11 million for our community. And yet, you know, very much between a September and November timeframe, we have agency partners, 35 agency partners support 50 programs in the health and human service arena. And so and yet we knew we needed to do something to support our community around this this crisis. So with board approval, we launched the Berks COVID-19 Response Fund. Solely funding it and staffing it at the end of March, March 25th, our board gave their approval. And during the last 6-7 weeks, we have raised over $950,000 that we are investing back into the community. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do those conversations look like? I mean, are these... obviously, you're not taking people out to lunch. So,
no, we're not.
What does that look like? I mean, talk to me about one of. I don't mean the numbers, but what is the engagement like with one of the bigger donors in that mix?
Well, interesting. You say that. You know, before we had even launched the fund, as the crisis was really breaking open, you know, one of our major donors simply went onto our website and gave us a major gift and said,
yeah,
I trust you. I know you're going to do with this what needs to be done.
Fantastic.
And so what a message to receive that,
yeah,
you know, there's so much faith in us to know. And then, you know, I have to give such a shout out to our president, Tammy White. She is so highly regarded in our community. With everyone, you know, with the corporate sector, with the foundations, with major donors. And she literally had, you know, a phone glued to her ear for, you know, for a few weeks talking to people who wanted to help and asking her, how can we help, you know, in the best way? And so what was so instrumental was getting some really significant gifts from foundations and and some trusts to launch the campaign. And then we had, we had the honor of having a local financial institution saying, we're going to give you a challenge match. And every dollar for every individual dollar raised will be matched dollar for dollar. We had a foundation do the same. So within the first few weeks, we had significant funding, and it's on our website, so nothing is anonymous. I'll let you know that we had $200,000 in challenge match dollars within the first 2 weeks of the launch. So you can imagine what kind of really an incentive that is for people, and what a motivator to know that if I give a gift of $50, it's matched twice, you know, so my 50 becomes 150. So that was really instrumental. And then about 2-3 weeks ago, you know, another longtime community volunteer couple was, you know, again, had originally given us a wonderful gift and then was just so taken by what we are doing in terms of the grants back out that they said, hey, we're going to give you a challenge match as well to really bring this thing home. And just again, I get goosebumps just retelling this to you because it's, you know, I mean, people just texting you or calling you and saying, hey, count me in for, and then you're like, oh my goodness, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it makes me think about, so those of us who have the privilege of having been on sort of the other side of the lunch table, if you will, soliciting some of these extraordinary gifts throughout our professional careers, it really does remind me of some of that enthusiasm and that determination that I oftentimes you can kind of see in the major donor's eyes, and sort of the desire to sort of be a part of something that's upbeat and positive. And so I'm thinking about late March, early April, when you guys are kicking this thing off, and I'm thinking, okay, so here's a United Way, a local United Way that has essentially given their community something very, very exciting to be a part of, and something that essentially is just, you know, at this point, $50,000 or whatever away from completing its goal. And so there's something being accomplished in the midst of what is very uncertain and ambiguous. And kudos to you. Kudos to you. I have had, Jean, I have to share with you, I've had two guests in the midst of, you're now the second. So I've had one guest up in the Boston area who shared with me, similarly, they had to pivot on a special event and had remarkable outcomes in terms of what they did with their virtual event. But you've just scored the second kudos card, I guess we'll call it. So, because that's really cool. That's really cool that you've been able to do that. So, and you have you evidently, obviously by this sort of this example, you have the evidence of what you were we were talking about before we hit the record button, the idea of sort of pressing forward and not looking back. And I really want to understand what that means from, you know, you professionally, from the AFP chapter that you're a membership member of and leading. And I also want to understand that from how that would apply to, say, the United Way. What does it mean to not turn back?
Sure. For me, it means, yes, we can always honor and respect our history and what has worked. Never want to disregard any of that. And we need to look forward in terms of, so what has this crisis, what is this crisis teaching us? And how can we embrace the growth opportunities? You know, in our wildest dreams, our United Way really didn't know that we could have this kind of an effort. And obviously we're all, you know, short of horrified that it had to be this crisis that brought this to bear. But I think other nonprofits are also experiencing that same, and whether you call it amazement or just like, wow, aha moment, like there is hope and there is growth and there are opportunities for us to really discover new ways of connecting with donors and doing our work to really accomplish our mission. And you know, our eyes are ours are open. So again, we are reimagining all that we have in terms of our campaign, because as you can really, when you think of what a traditional United Way campaign looks like, we're going into, we have the privilege of going into companies and presenting face-to-face meetings and gathering people in groups. And that is all, you know, uncertain at this point. So we have no idea what things are going to look like come the fall timeframe. So right now, what we're doing is thinking, and how can we do things differently to connect with lots of folks in terms of our traditional workplace engagement, and also people outside of that, and our major donors, and our foundations. So it's really presenting us with a lot of new opportunities that we are going to be embracing. And, you know, there's always that hesitation, just a bit, you know, and then you realize it's okay. We're doing it. We're having success. And we need to keep moving in that direction. And so
I was talking to somebody the day before yesterday, and I sort of on the notion of success, do you think we'll redefine success? Do you think success will sort of get, you know, we talk about pivoting and we're talking about new normal and we, you know, so all these sort of terms that we're making, but do you think success will have to sort of be adjusted?
I do believe that. And I believe, you know, there are lots of ways to think differently and still accomplish what the goal will be. So I think we really need to look at what our goals are.
Yeah.
And what are those goals? You know, it doesn't need to be, we need to raise this much money. You know, the goal can be, we need to strengthen relationships so that our donors know us intimately and continue to support us through good, bad, and everything in between.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do we accomplish our mission in different ways? Engaging with people differently, whether that be through volunteering, you know, having really earnest conversations with them. And I think, you know, the sky is the limit in terms of looking at new ways and new ways of defining success.
Right. You know, one of the things that occurs to me, Jean, is I've been talking to people. We had a webinar series a couple of weeks ago, and one of the gentlemen that I was talking to, him and I were talking afterwards. It's this idea of I've been working on a book, and I've been picking on efficiency, for example, in the book. Mm-hmm. And I almost wonder if COVID-19 is forcing us to sort of slow down. And consequently, because we're going to slow down, we're going to maybe really demonstrate that ability to really build meaningful relationships. Yes. Consequently, what we might do is we might actually put the relationships before the efficiency or the expediency with which we raise money. And I think that efficiency will come back in like a hyper level on the back end. So, I mean, you know what I'm saying.
I totally agree.
We actually could raise more money if we really, really dug in our heels and said we're going to put relationships first.
I totally agree because I look at the number of our major givers, for instance, with our fund, and how many have stepped forward and stepped forward in a big way. And most of that was done because, you know, they have such trust in us and our, you know, our reputation and our relationships, where we are reaching out to them and, you know, not every, you know, week, not every month even. However, they feel like they can pick up the phone at any time and get our president or our director of major gifts or myself and have a conversation that is meaningful, and we can answer questions and we can have a dialogue around, well, you know, what's best here, or, you know, just always encouraging their feedback. In fact, this afternoon, we have a town hall with our major gift society, And we're going to have 50 plus folks on the call talking really about giving an update about the fund itself, and then having two of our major gift society members who actually sit on the panel that is reviewing all the grants because of their expertise. And they're going to share with their fellow members what they've been doing over the last 6 weeks, 6-7 weeks to really vet the grants and really have a deep understanding that they can approve the grants onto our executive committee for their review. So that's the kind of relationship and strength we have to have two of our own major gift society members sitting on a panel because of their expertise and their knowledge of our organization.
Do you think the so I teach a management nonprofit management course at the local college, and we talk about the United Way in one of our case studies is sort of one of these legacy organizations that's been around for what, more than a century or something?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Is United Way one of those organizations that, and I know you guys have been sort of a lot of these organizations going through changes, and mm-hmm. I mean, you guys were talking about pivoting before pivoting became the thing. So do you think COVID-19 will sort of change who the United Way is? You can't just, I mean, a guy like me cannot look at what you guys have just pulled off through a critical lens and say, man, they're not relevant. You guys are obviously able to pull off something in very measurable ways. And our local United Way does similar things. But that's remarkable.
Yeah, I think I agree totally. And, you know, the system as a whole, there are, you know, over 1,200 United Ways across the country and globally, even more. You know, as a system, when this broke open, we said, we are here, we are ready. We are that community collaborator and that organization that truly has their finger on the pulse of what's going on. We can connect immediately and bring everyone around the table to figure out how best to move forward. You know, the Brian Gallagher, who's the president, the CEO of president of United Way Worldwide, you know, was interviewed, and he basically said, you know, United Way was made for this moment because it started in so many of our communities, you know, as a war chest or because of, a health crisis. That people said, let's get, you know, folks together, the community chest, let's get them together and all, you know, raise dollars and see that those dollars get into the hands of the folks who are going to do the most critical work. And so it began. And this is very much like why we were all literally birthed in our communities. So and I have to say, again, our president, Tammy, has really been, tapped to help on so many different areas of homelessness prevention and, you know, ensuring food is there and available and, you know, just really being looked at our organization and she in particular as, you know, a real expert in bringing people together and figuring out how to take care of our local community.
When you were describing her work with this recent campaign, you said she's, you know, her ear has been glued to her cell phone or phone on her desk. And it occurred to me that, so I've always been a big fan, and you've heard me speak, I think, and I'm a big fan of the lunch table, but I have also always appreciated the telephone. And I almost wonder if post COVID, we're going to actually see sort of a return to the telephone, in that we're going to develop a greater level of we're going to get back as sort of a profession, the fundraising profession. Maybe we're going to rekindle that confidence that maybe we once had on the telephone. What do you think about that?
I can only hope, Jason, because if you haven't already figured it out, I love to talk. I love people, and I love finding connections. And you know, one of the things that my team has done is we have somewhere just shy of 300 or so individual donors who have provided gifts to us for this fund. So what we did is divvy up that list amongst our team and, you know, just crafted a very brief script to get people started who might not as be comfortable. But honestly, it's a conversation. And we are calling all of those donors and to say thank you. And it's, I'm amazed at how many are picking up the phone because they're available and they are welcoming our call, even though they may not know the number. Or in one or two instances, I left a message and the donor called me back and I didn't even know this donor. So these are folks I don't know at all. And, you know, I was on a call with this enchanting woman from Texas who gave us a lovely gift. I was on the phone with her for 30 minutes, finding out about who she is and what her connection to Berks County is. And we went on and found so many, you know, we were just connecting dots and it was lovely, really, really lovely.
Perhaps it'll remind. So one of the things that I've been quite vocal about is that I think we have, it's the way you talk, you enjoy talking on the phone. And I think a lot of us fundraisers love to communicate. We love to be in conversation and most of us have learned to do that really well, but we have, you know, I would say in the last decade, and certainly since sort of maybe the turn of the century with the rise of the internet and stuff, we've gotten so we hide behind our email and we hide behind our desktops. Yeah. And I think maybe COVID is sort of reminding us that I don't care how much of a computer or email program you have, you know, how impressive that program is in front of you, you're a human being who wants to interact and engage with other human beings. And like the donor that's picking up the phone, calling you from Texas of all places, right? Wants the same thing. And so I think at times we have sort of diminished our own sort of, especially as fundraising professionals, I think we're probably some of the most social and friendly people on the planet, but we've allowed technology and efficiency to sort of get in our way.
I agree. And I do believe, as you know, talked about just a few minutes ago, I believe this opportunity, while we can't be face to face, is going to moving forward. And again, no looking back, but moving forward is going to allow us that freedom and desire to connect with people much more intentionally. And really pick up that phone, and it may be months until we can actually, you know, sit at the lunchroom table. But boy, what a lunch that will be when we can actually see people, right?
Yeah, it'll be like getting together with your friends from college or something, right?
It is. So to know that we have that to look forward to, and until that time, we can strengthen those relationships even more by keeping in touch with them, by letting them know how their gift is impacting and helping our community, and letting them know that we care about them and simply reaching out. You know, another story, you know, I have two wonderful folks who help with a lot of our events, you know, and I've reached out to them to say, how are you? You know, I can't imagine how things are going because, you know, one is like a, you know, he makes everything look beautiful, you know, in terms of the space. And then another is a caterer. And they both really appreciated me reaching out to them to say, yeah, this is hard. This stinks. You know, we're not doing much right now. And yet we so appreciate you thinking of us because we'll be back and we can't wait to work with you again. So those, you know, it's everyone. It's everyone that you need to connect with and make sure that there's, you know, that connection is not interrupted and it doesn't go away because we can't see each other. And that's why, I mean, I have check-in calls with my team 3 times a week and I need to see their faces, you know, and it is on a, you know, a virtual platform that I can see them. I need that. And I think everybody needs a little something of that. Isolation is so hard. And it just speaks to our human spirit that we are naturally wanting to be together. And so, you know, taking those opportunities to phone or to chat with people, call people, people appreciate it. And we need to do more of that as we move forward.
So here's an interesting question. If you were using this $950,000 or whatever that you've raised, and you're using it as a case study, and if we sort of said that what your donors have sort of responded to is maybe is it a desire? Is it an underlying desire, to use your word, to be connected or to take action when they don't feel like they can otherwise? Which one of those do you think is sort of the more compelling thing that's going on? I mean, I totally see both, but I'm interested to know what you think. I'm interested to know what you think is the more powerful, you know, what is most compelling them? Is it action or connectedness?
I actually think it is the action piece with that underpinnings of connecting, and my action is making a difference. You know, as I was making some of my calls to individual donors who could have given us $25, $10, $100, $10,000, many, many of them, the vast majority said, I'm happy to do this because I care so deeply about this community. It's been so good to me, and I want to make sure that those in need have the supports they need to see this through. You know, and what a message to hear time and time again.
Well, it's a refreshing. There's been what I have been seeing at some of the research I've been doing. There's been such a heavy critique, almost an assault in my mind, starting back in 2018 with some books written on philanthropy. And when you look at generosity, so let's think about a $10,000 gift that you all received that you're saying was motivated by this desire to take action, but also motivated in such a way where they know that they can't attach any strings to it. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of control going on. They can't even sit across the lunch table and insist that they're picking up the tab for lunch. Right? Just want to act. They just want to act in a meaningful way, and they want to know they want to know that it's going to go to a place. It's going to matter at a time when it matters. And so I think maybe we're going to come out on the other side of this with just a more upbeat, enthusiastic, refreshed sort of picture of what it is these people are looking for.
I agree. And it's not a transaction. It's not a transaction. You know, let me send you this check. It's so much more than that. And we need to respect that and really focus our work moving forward on that. And especially in times where, you know, you can't have the big, the big fundraising gala, and you can't have necessarily even the golf tournament. You know, if efforts would be focused instead on the relationship piece and calling people, that will go, in my estimation, you know, so much will bring about so much more in terms of the relationships we have and ultimately the support we receive from those who care about whatever that passion is, whatever the mission of the organization, and want to see that it is sustained and grown in spite of this crisis that where we find ourselves right now, and you know, whatever crises lie ahead, it's all about, at the end of the day, Jason, it's all about, you know, people helping people in whatever way that is.
You can't sell them anything. I'm thinking about one of my big critiques on the way that a lot of fundraising gets done is we're essentially selling them a widget or something, or we're mm-hmm. selling them a name on a banner. Mm-hmm. And you know this, you know, most United Ways are guilty of it, just like everybody else. We sell them something, right?
Right.
We sell them the prestige. If we're not selling them a chicken dinner at a gala, we're selling them the platform to get up on the stage. You can't sell anybody anything right now.
No.
And quite frankly, nobody wants anything. The last thing in the world I want somebody to do right now is call me up and ask me for a, you know, it's $500 check in exchange for some silly widget. And, right. and in reality, and because those needs, that perhaps we have on this side, on the giving side, are not, they're not as valued either. And so it occurs to me that that perhaps as we go forward, we'll be less inclined to sort of come up with these gimmicks to sell people. Yeah. Right. And we'll be like, hey, let's just try genuineness, authenticity, find the real need, find the purpose, and give them some action to sort of take, to move.
I totally agree. And, you know, I can't help thinking about, you know, your book and how we spend so much time on this stuff, on this, you know, track one, and how, you know, right. we're, again, that efficiency and let's make sure, yeah. you know, the stuff gets done. And instead, this has this time, you know, working from home and has really allowed me, I'll speak for me, and I believe I can speak for so many others when I say it's really allowed us, you know, the pace to say, hey, you know, to really think about what's important here, and whether that's in our family relationships, our friends, you know, whomever, and certainly our work, what's important here. And let's concentrate on that. Because as it relates to our work, we're working in a not-for-profit to really bring about positive change in whatever type of nonprofit that might be. And to have the ultimate gift in my mind is to have the ability to connect a donor, you know, who has that desire to act because they believe in your organization and your mission, to really have that conversation that allows them to act on what they believe is so important.
So the only thing I don't think I've picked up on, because we've sort of sat on this campaign, this remarkable campaign, where's the money going? So this report that you're giving to the 50 major donors this evening, mm-hmm. What do you do with a, you know, $1 million right now?
Yeah, what do we do? So really excited to say that already in just these few short weeks, we have given out grants that total not quite $500,000.
Yeah.
So okay. 30 grants to a variety of local nonprofits that are very much responding to these first few weeks of critical needs, including food. That has been probably almost the number one need in the community.
Yeah, sure.
And again, housing. You know, utility assistance, all of those things that have just totally been disrupted during this crisis. And so there is a, you know, a thorough vetting that comes in, and we've tried to get the message out to all of our health and human service nonprofits in our entire county footprint that come, you know, send your submissions in, and then we will help you if it needs to be, you know, really, you know, vetted a little bit differently. You know, we will help you to put forth a proposal that really shows that you're doing, you know, important work in the community. And so we are thrilled that, you know, many are our agency partners, but many are well beyond our agency partners. So again, we are now forming relationships with other nonprofits that are doing critical work and helping people, you know, get through this crisis. And now, you know, we're now just starting to turn our view to recovery and what that looks like for the long term. And we know the needs will continue. You know, as soon as we're in the green phase doesn't mean, you know, go full steam ahead. You know, we recognize there will be needs for the coming months and perhaps years to come. And
You guys are totally on both sides of the, it didn't occur to me until you were just describing that, but you guys are on both sides of the fundraising process. You're on both the receiving, the giving and the receiving
Absolutely.
Side. So do you think going forward, The granting side will be enhanced, because what I'm hearing is perhaps some of the engagement, the same way we would want to more engage and increase the dynamic, improve upon the dynamic between you and your funders, you're also perhaps improving upon the dynamic that's playing out your responsiveness to those who you're funding.
Absolutely. And, you know, we are establishing some new relationships and really strengthening relationships where we may have given a grant perhaps once or twice in our history. And now, you know, we're really getting to know the folks who are at the heart of providing relief and help to those most in need. And again, it's that collaboration and just, you know, helping people to think through what makes the most sense in terms of, you know, getting food out and distribution. One other thing that we've done that was like, you know, kind of an aha moment for us is personal protective equipment. And again, one of our donors had some connections, made a generous gift of PPE to us. And we then acted as the distributor of all of this personal protective equipment to our agencies and beyond, because they were desperate to try and get their hands on this. So they were so grateful. So those distributions continue. Again, a whole new role for us to play in this crisis. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love the idea that you're not sitting there, you know, crunching your teeth watching CNN or Fox News or whatever you're watching, but you're actually creating you're actually playing a facilitative role at a time when people want to act. And what better way to do that than to get right at things like some of, you know, like the masks or something. If you guys can sort of be that intermediary, figure that out, get the funding for it. Oh yeah, that's just, isn't that a refreshing way to sort of look at philanthropy?
It is. And the other thing that we're so proud of and trying to get the message out about is we are the sole supporter in our area of 211, which is the Health and Human Service referral number.
Yeah.
And people need, it's like a helpline and a hotline for them, because they don't know where to turn. And the volume of calls have doubled in the last two months over previous years, because people need somewhere to turn to for help. And so we're so grateful that we're able to, again, one more tool in our toolbox to really be there for the community.
Jean, this has been a very upbeat and enthusiastic conversation. Delighted that you joined me today. If there's a United Way in Montana right now that's listening to this, what's your advice to them if they say, we're missing this boat, we're not getting this? What's your advice to them?
My advice would be to gather your leadership, both staff and volunteer, and really, with hope and purpose, look at your strengths and how you can connect to your community and to your donors to provide the support that is needed in your community in whatever shape and form that takes, through funding, through being a collaborator, whatever it takes. You have it within you. You've been successful, and you need to really look at all of your strengths and pull them together to move you forward, and to, at the end of the day, to help your community, because we are helping hope to the people here in our local community.
Jean, you could not have wrapped it up better. Thank you again. I look forward to being back in the room with you in the very near future. In the meantime, you're always welcome back here. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jason, for this opportunity. I've really enjoyed it. Have a great day.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.